Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Stuart Resnick, the richest farmer in the country, is not a household name, but you've probably eaten his Wonderful Almonds or Pistachios. That's the name of his company. He also owns Halo Mandarins, Wonderful Pomegranate Juice, and Fiji Water. Stuart Resnick says he doesn't know how much land he owns. He told today's guest, journalist Mark Arax, that he thinks it's around 180,000 acres. 121,000 of those are irrigated. Stuart Resnick's mega farms produce almonds, pistachios, citrus, and other crops. He uses more than 400,000 acre feet of water for his 15 million trees, making him the largest single water user in the Western United States. So where does all of this water come from? What are the ecological impacts of water intensive crops on a state that has been suffering for many droughts? In the February edition of California Sunday Magazine called A Kingdom from Dust, today's guest, Mark Arax, writes a lengthy investigation about Stuart Resnick and offers a rare look into his empire. He writes, he uses more water than any other person in the West. His 15 million trees in the San Joaquin Valley consume more than 400,000 acre feet of water a year. The city of Los Angeles, by comparison, consumes 587,000 acre feet. Resnick's billions rely on his ability to master water, sun, soil, and even bees. Mark Arax's 20,000-word article is a preview of his upcoming book on water in California. Mark Arax is an award-winning journalist and author of the book West of the West, Dreamers, Believers, Builders, and Killers in the Golden State. And Mark joins us on the line from Fresno. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Well, Mark, we've done a lot of shows about water and a couple shows about Stuart Resnick, but I'm sure that a lot of people don't really know much about him. How long have you been following and writing about Stuart Resnick and his wife, Linda?
I first started writing about Resnick in 2003. I was working on a book called The King of California about the agricultural empire, this one being cotton, of J.G. Boswell. It was kind of a hidden, secret American empire. And as I was working on that, I was told that there was a new king of California emerging, and his name was Stuart Resnick, and he was farming on the other side of the lake bottom from Boswell. And this was an odd place where he was farming, to farm, because it had no groundwater to speak of. You know, most of the San Joaquin Valley has groundwater, so in drought, the farmers could put their pumps and wells deeper into the ground and pump out more water. But here in western Kern County, where Resnick's empire began, there was no groundwater. So how was he farming in dry times? And that's when I started looking into this water bank. And this water bank, called the Kern Water Bank, was jump-started by the state of California taxpayers with $74 million. The state couldn't quite get it going, and in a series of secret meetings in Monterey, this water bank was acquired by Resnick and some other farmers. He controlled it, and that allowed him, that water, it could fill up in flood years to 1 million acre feet. That water allowed him then to pretend that he had groundwater, and so he planted then millions of acres of almonds, pistachios, pomegranates, and mandarins, and so that was that initial story that I did in the early 2000s when I was with the Los Angeles Times, and I just kept gathering string on him because he was a fascinating character. He was unlike any farmer here in the San Joaquin Valley.
And you've tried for many years to get an interview with him. He and his wife do not talk to the media, he has said, because they don't have to. But he decided to finally give you an interview.
Yeah, in 2008, I contacted him again. This was 5 years after I did that original story in the LA Times. And he had read The King of California, thought it was a good book that portrayed a farmer in a fair light, and wondered if I might write a book about him. So we got together several times at his mansion in Beverly Hills, at his corporate headquarters on the west side of LA, and I started getting more and more notes, and at some point I got busy with something else. He got busy with something else. And I put aside my notebooks and tapes and then waited for this new book that I'm working on now to happen. And then that's when I contacted him. He said, let's talk some more.
And we'll talk about what you learned about Stuart Resnick. But when you talk about the Kern Water Bank, it's California's largest water bank, a project jump-started with $74 million in taxpayer money. We've talked about this before in that meeting that happened in Monterey, but can you remind us the most important parts of that? I mean, were there politicians present there? Do they understand and know what Resnick is doing? Do they support this?
There were no politicians at the Monterey. There was folks from the Metropolitan Water District. There were agricultural interests. There were all the big water users in the state got together in a room and started hashing out a kind of deal. What happened was we had just before the Monterey agreements, we had a terrible, terrible drought. And the farmers couldn't get any water in that drought. And yet the same system that served the farmers continued to send the water up and over the mountain, you know, down the San Joaquin Valley, up and over the mountain into L.A. The farmers thought that, you know, this was not equitable. And so they got the big Metropolitan Water District folks in a room, and they started hashing out this agreement. And out of that agreement was a bunch of things. One, it made it easier to trade water, to sell water on an open market. Two, the farmers and the cities during drought would both have to pony up water. It would not be disproportionately, you know, that burden would not be disproportionately borne by agriculture. And then three, this water bank that the state had started, it dug ground there in Kern County, but just couldn't get it going because Kern County, in part, put up some resistance. They wanted to control it locally. That water bank ended up becoming controlled by Resnick. And by virtue of that, by dint of that, that became the way that his empire really grew even bigger.
You ask a number of questions in your piece, writing about all of the pistachio and almond trees that he owns, the 100,000 acres of permanent crops, completely reliant on the government supply of mountain water. You write, how can this be? No rain in 5 years, state water dwindling year after year, no water in the ground to make up for the missing government supply. How can another record crop be sitting pretty on those trees? And then you write, I got lucky. I came upon a wonderful field man in a 4x4 truck who listens to my bewilderment and takes pity. As he drives off, he throws a clue out the window. Turn onto Twisselman Road off of I-5 and continue west until it intersects with the California Aqueduct. And there, he tells you, in the shadow of the state's great concrete vein moving snowmelt north to the south, you'll find a private off-the-books pipeline that Stuart Resnick has built to keep his trees from dying. What did you find there?
Okay, well, so let me just go back a little bit. So, yes, there's this mystery. They have these record crops on these trees in the middle of a drought. The water bank water has run out. The state water project water is not flowing there. And so the obvious question is, how in the hell are they doing this? And so So I'm driving, and you know, this is a landscape that is, you know, one of the oddest in the world. I mean, it's just, you're in the middle of nowhere, but it's really not nowhere because there's trees all around you. And so I'm trying to figure out, see, you know, how they're moving water, which is an impossible thing to do. You know, there are thousands of irrigation ditches and canals, you know, not to mention the great big aqueduct flowing right through the middle of this earth. So yeah, I get lucky. And this guy says, look, there's a variety of things that they're doing to bring water here, and one of them is this secret pipeline. So I drive in the, down to Twisselman, and I see this silver snake kind of glinting in the sun, and that is moving water from 50 miles away, water that's been pumped out of the ground, and then is moving 50 miles by pipeline into Lost Hills, where Resnick's orchards, are. And so that becomes a device for me, a kind of mystery that I build this whole chapter around. And it's the one, you know, it kind of helps folks get through 20,000 words as well. And so where is that water coming from? Who is it exactly going to? By what means becomes some of the things that I ask myself and finally answer by the end of this story.
How is he able to do this legally?
Well, you know, California water law is really complicated. It's a mixture of strange, you know, English common law and then gold mining, you know, tradition, and it's a weird amalgam of things. And when it comes to groundwater, we're really a strange animal, the state of California. I mean, we've been at the forefront of all, you know, these environmental kinds of safeguards, you know, and we've stood as an example to the rest of the country when it comes to fighting air quality and all sorts of other things. But when it comes to water, we are the last state to regulate it. And it's just been in the last few years that we finally passed a groundwater management law that, oddly, won't go into effect for another 15 years. So there is that whole mining culture that got grafted onto the California land in 1849. It still exists. It's just not gold now, and it's not gold anymore. It's water. So these guys are able to pump this water out and move it. And if the farmers in the area where it's being pumped don't complain, and it's just freewheeling. Well, it so happened that the farmers where they were taking this water from did complain and sued and got a restraint on that water being taken. So those farmers could now sue again and say that you're taking water out of our basin and this violates county ordinance. So there's no state law that prohibits it, really. So that's how they were able to do it. And it wasn't just Resnick. Resnick was on the receiving end. It was another billionaire farmer, developer, who had come up and over the mountain from Santa Clara that was pumping the water out and sending it to them. So one billionaire was helping another multi-billionaire get through drought.
Today we are speaking with award-winning journalist and author Mark Arax about a 20,000-word piece he wrote for California Sunday Magazine called A Kingdom from Dust. It's a lengthy investigation about Stuart Resnick and his wife Linda. It offers a rare look into their empire. They privately hold this company. It's a $4.5 billion privately held company. And Stuart Resnick is known by people in California, but really not a household name. Chances are, if you eat almonds or pistachios, they might come from his farms. They also own Halo Mandarins, Wonderful Palm Juice, and Fiji Water. And today we're talking with Mark Arax about this piece. And if you have any questions about water in California, about the Resnick Empire, and how they have been able to use so much water on their crops, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. The 15 million trees in the San Joaquin Valley owned by the Resnicks consume more than 400,000 acre feet of water every year. Compare that to the city of Los Angeles. They consume 587,000 acre feet. You can also email your call at kalw.org or leave a comment on social media. Mark, as a California native, I was really struck by your descriptions of the land, because those of us who live in Northern California, you know, we might drive by these areas, but we don't spend that much time there. You are not a reporter who decided to just parachute in and write about this and leave. You have a very deep connection to this land. Your grandfather came to the land to farm. Your dad was a grape grower. You grew up in the suburbs of Fresno in the 60s and the 70s. When you describe this place to people in Northern California or the Bay Area, what do you think is most important to know about, to learn about?
Well, this is the most altered landscape, one of the most, some studies say the most altered landscape by human hand in the history of man. This was the middle of California, depending on what kind of weather year it was either desert or marsh. And there were hills throughout the valley that got flattened by a thing called the Fresno Scraper that had been invented in the 1870s. And the rivers, five rivers that run from the Sierra across the land, their entire flow was captured by, you know, by the late 1890s. And the lakes, we had the biggest body of fresh water west of the Mississippi was Tulare Lake, and it was drained dry. It was a lake that supported five different, you know, Yokut Indian tribes. It so happened to be drained by these cotton growers who had left the South. The boll weevil had chased them out of the South, and they landed in the middle of California and not only drained that lake, but brought their southern kind of plantation culture to California. So it's a vast, wide-open land, and it's been manipulated in a way that few landscapes have. And most of that manipulation has been, you know, the bending of water and the moving of dust. Mm. So there's a conjuring that's taken place here. You know, when I was growing up here, irrigation canals were going by our houses. We never asked, you know, well, where's this water coming from? Who is it going to? You know, the most we knew about the canals was to stay away from them in summer because they were flowing fast. And they weren't fenced off. If you happened to climb up the embankment and fall in, you were as good as gone. So there was a kind of, you know, you were kind of dumb to your place almost. And it wasn't until years later when I started, you know, when I was a journalist who came back here, that I started asking myself these questions of who owns this water? How can a farmer actually own a river? That kind of stuff.
What about the people who live in the area? How has that changed since you were a child?
Well, one of the things about our culture in the middle of California, it's a culture of importation. Once we used up our five rivers and then went into the ground and extracted so much groundwater that the land began to sink, we asked the federal government to save us, to bring us a river from afar. And so, like you guys have your river from afar, it comes out of the Yosemite, mm-hmm. We went to Sacramento and brought in the Sacramento River to then continue this farming growth. And we also import, we know we reach deeper and deeper into the heart of rural Mexico to import our workers. So the importation of those folks have just changed the culture here. You know, the school district in Fresno is now 90% Latino. And there is this flight of white folks leaving Fresno to go to this nearby town called Clovis, and you know, and so the farming has not just shaped the land that the farm is on; it's shaped the whole suburban experience here as well. White flight, all that kind of stuff. Poverty. I mean, Fresno has some of the highest concentrated poverty in the United States. One year, its neighborhoods had more concentrated poverty than any city in the country. New Orleans was number two. So there is all this these social, you know, kinds of implications that come from having a culture of extraction and importation.
Today's guest, Mark Arax, is an award-winning journalist and author. He wrote a very lengthy piece in the February edition of California Sunday Magazine called A Kingdom from Dust. It's about the Resnick Empire. Stuart and Linda control 65% of the American pistachio market, processing nuts at a facility the size of seven super Walmarts. They have a $4.5 billion private enterprise. If you eat almonds or pistachios, they probably come from the wonderful company. Linda chose that name, Wonderful. We'll talk with Mark about it in just a couple minutes. They also own Halo Mandarins and Wonderful Palm Juice. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. If you grew up in the San Joaquin Valley, that part of California, Fresno, we'd love to hear from you. How have you seen it change the people and the land? You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And if you have any questions for Mark about the Resniks and how they are able to use so much water to water their crops, you can give us a call. Let's hear from Pamela in Berkeley. Hi, Pamela. Welcome to the show.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, because I'm driving. This is really close to my heart, and I grew up half-time on my grandmother's ranch between Madera and Fresno, and knew that my great-grandfather, who left the ranch to her, had had his orchards as soon as they came into full ripening, eminent domain by Mulholland, so that water from the Switzerland of the West, you know, and could go, instead of into Mono Lake, down to Los Angeles. That was heartbreaking. And I watched, growing up, the family farms up and down, you know, Highway 99 being sold off to so-called agribiz, which was actually owned by oil companies. And I know that I've heard, I don't know if this is, if you, your facts are great, by the way, I can't wait to read your article, but I've heard that either halo or cuties or a lot of that fruit in the Central Valley is fed with gray water from fracking, which has got some pollutants in it, chemicals and petroleum or who knows what. And what else did I don't know, I'm trying to think of some, I have so much to say. Oh, yeah, there were, my grandmother never had a phone or electricity out to her ranch for most of her life, because it was 30 miles north of Fresno. And one time I was out there, and the pump, was the house well from which we got water was pumped from a windmill, and the wind wasn't blowing, but I heard the pump going up and down and up and down. It was a regular beat, and I asked one of the cowboys who was there, because after my grandfather died, the grain was turned over to cattle. And he said, oh, that's over in Madera, you know, 25 miles away. They're using sprayers, those external sprayers, to grow sugar beets, which are really kind of a crap crop like cotton is.
Yeah.
And every time those sprayers spray, you can hear the aquifer go up and down in your grandmother's well.
That's a beautiful memory. I might steal that and stick that in the book.
Go ahead. Thank you for calling in, Pamela. Pamela brought up a number of points there, Mark.
Yeah,
your comments?
First of all, that memory is beautiful. I might steal that and put it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's, because sound does go that far in the valley, and that those the beat of the pumps becomes almost a white noise that could put people to sleep. She's right that sugar beets, like cotton, was a crop that was almost like a weed. It could grow in salty ground, but not much cotton and sugar beets are grown anymore because of these higher value crops like pistachios and almonds and halos. She talked about fracking. Yeah, there is some water that comes from some of the oil exploration that is used on some of the crops. That's just being looked into now. One of the things that we have to remember is this big valley is actually three valleys. There is the east side that kind of is up against the Sierra, and it's where most of the citrus belt is, and the farms tend to be smaller. The communities tend to be vibrant. The children of farm workers go to school with the children of the growers. There are places like Lindsay, Strathmore, Visalia. So that's one part of the valley. Then the center valley is also a valley that Fowler, Selma, places like that, where in Fresno, where there tends to be smaller farming, the water table, the groundwater table, is more sustainable there because of the recharge coming down from the Sierra. And then we have the West Valley, okay, and this is where Westland's Water District is. And if you go south, this is where Lost Hills and Resnick is. And this is a more of an extraction kind of farming. The land began big. We had industrialists living on Knob Hill that first, in the 1870s, that first bought this land and started growing wheat here on the west side. And then the cattle king, Henry Miller, who was a butcher in San Francisco, he came up and over the mountain, and he brought his cattle to the west side. And then the oil companies came, Tenneco and Superior, and they bought that land. And where they couldn't extract oil, they planted crops. So the west side is so much different than the Middle Valley and the east side. There are almost no communities there. And the communities that are there tend to be farm labor camps, kind of glorified farm labor camps. And this is what Lost Hills was for a long time, until a few years ago when the Resniks decided, okay, this is our town, we've been here 25 years, it's time we need to give back. And that is the other part of this story, this extraordinary philanthropy that has come to Lost Hills and some of the west side of Kern County because of the generosity of the Resniks. Generosity and some guilt, I'm sure. And so that is another aspect to this piece.
And we'll talk about that right after the break. We're speaking with Mark Arax today. He's an award-winning journalist and author. He has a lengthy story in the February edition of the California Sunday Magazine called A Kingdom from Dust. It's a lengthy investigation about Stuart Resnick and his wife, Linda. They have a $4.5 billion private empire. They use more water than any other person in the West. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with Sanara Taylor about her new book, Beasts of Burden. Sanara was 6 when she first learned that animals are mistreated. And when she was 21, she realized the same thing about people with disabilities. In her new book, she wants us to think deeply about what divides the human from the animal, the disabled from the non-disabled, and what it might mean to break down those divisions. And then on Wednesday, we will talk about Doug Shifter, a 61-year-old who earlier this month shot and killed himself in front of New York City Hall. He left a note on Facebook before he killed himself. He was a driver in New York, and he blamed the mayor, the governor there, Uber and Lyft, saying that they count their money. We're driven down into the streets. We drive becoming homeless and hungry. I will not be a slave working for chump change. I would rather be dead. That's what we're going to talk about on Wednesday. Today we are joined by award-winning journalist and author Mark Arax. He has a lengthy investigation in the California Sunday Magazine called A Kingdom from Dust. It takes a look at the empire of Stuart and his wife Linda Resnick. If you eat almonds or pistachios, they might come from their company called Wonderful. They also own Halo Mandarins and Wonderful Palm Juice. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Mark was able to interview Stuart after years of trying and wanted to talk to him about his empire, 180,000 acres, he thinks. And they own trees, so many crops in the San Joaquin Valley. They consume more than 400,000 acre feet of water every year. Mark, we have a number of callers on the line. Let's hear from Marie Louise in Palo Alto. Hi, Marie Louise. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning. I really thank you for this program, and I thank you for the work you've done.
Can you please turn your radio down? Marie Louise, can you please turn your radio down?
Oh, is this better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, sorry, I had it. Okay. So I wanted to, before I forget, could you please spell AROX?
Yes, it's A-R-A-X.
Okay, thank you. And my question is, it seems to me that it would be worth looking into the water from Fiji, although I'm so interested of every word you've spoken. But from Fiji, you know, how is water taken away from there? If you have time, if you've looked into that, I would be very interested. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
I didn't look into Fiji. It was difficult enough to try to pierce what they were doing here in California, but you know, they've acquired some of these springs, natural springs and things like that in Fiji, and took over that company. They didn't start Fiji Water. they bought it within the last 10 years or so. And, you know, there have been complaints over the years about, you know, the extraction of that water, you know, out of that place to, you know, satisfy the thirst of people who are, you know, all over the world. So, but I have not looked into that.
Well, thank you for calling in, Marie-Louise, and you can find the article at yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Chris in Berkeley. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So I just finished a book, an earlier book by Max Arax called The King of California, about the Boswells, who were an earlier large farmer. In fact, I think the largest farmer in America at a time, and who were able to subvert Harold Ickes and Franklin Roosevelt's intentions for Western water, including the acreage limits of getting subsidized water. I wonder, how do a few farmers, including the Boswells and Resnicks, have so much power? Is it payola, campaign contributions, hobnobbing? And the second question is, how does Senator Feinstein fit into the plans of these big farmers and their water needs?
Well, thank you. To add to that question, Mark, Ted left a message online saying, can you talk about the Resnicks' relationship with not only Governor Brown and state politics, but what about their interactions with prominent national politicians like Devin Nunes?
Okay, let's start. There was a number of questions there. Boswell was the biggest farmer in the United States. They still control more water than any other farmer, more than Resnick, because they have they're operating in the bottom of what was once a lake, and all those rivers that fed that lake, they have rights to that water. Because Boswell did not take Central Valley Project water, so there was no acreage limits on the water he had. That's Westlands Water District, where there are acreage limits, and the farmers have used all sorts of shell games to evade those limits over the years. So yes, Resnick now has overtaken, because of the value of his crops. Boswell was largely a cotton grower. Resnick, growing all these high-dollar crops, has taken over as the richest farmer in the United States. He is a liberal. I would say Linda is a liberal. He's a Democrat. But because they are in the business of farming, and that means they're in the business of water and the movement of water, they support sometimes Republican candidates. They've never supported Devin Nunes. I think Devin Nunes is too wild for even them. But they have a close relationship to Feinstein and her husband, Richard Bloom. And Feinstein has done a few things that have been pretty questionable. Resnick has written her, and then she has written some of the federal agencies wondering why water, you know, more water isn't, you know, running down the aqueduct to Resnick in times of drought. So there is some, you know, questions that have been raised about that relationship.
Has Resnick given Feinstein money?
I believe so. It's been a while since I've looked. Yeah, but I think they're all social friends as well. So you know, the Resnicks have a place in Aspen, and a lot of socializing and business get conducted there. So, but yeah, they put money into certain candidates, and because of, you know, because of the land they control and the water, they obviously have a big say so. Even in the twin tunnels debate that's happening now, you know, that's happened for the last few years, they're big supporters of those tunnels because they feel that it will allow more of the state water project to run, you know, reliably in dry times to their orchards.
Well, thank you for those questions. And before we talk about Lost Hills, is there anything else we should know about the connections between the Resnicks and California politicians, Mark? We've got some very important elections coming up this year.
No, I think, you know, they're kind of how you would assume, you know, big landowners and folks who control water. I mean, they they end up having a relationship to certain politicians. And but I, you know, nothing that would, you know, would be surprising. Let's put it that way. But I do think the relationship with Feinstein is one that you know, some folks should probably delve into some of the newspapers. The problem with the newspapers is that you know, as they're kind of imploding, no one's really covering water. There's just a few, you know, maybe four or five full-time water reporters left in the state of California.
Well, thank you for those questions. We're speaking today with Mark Arax. He is out with an investigation about Stuart Resnick and his wife, Linda. They have a $4.5 billion private empire. They've got 15 million trees in the San Joaquin Valley, consuming more than 400,000 acre-feet of water every year. And you can find that story at yourcallradio.org. Mark, let's talk about the people who actually work for this company. The people who live in Lost Hills. As you write in your piece, Lost Hills is not a city. It's known as a census-designated place, which is another way of saying that Kern County has every reason to neglect it. Where exactly is Lost Hills, and what does it look like?
Well, the first thing you have to know about Lost Hills is that there are no hills in Lost Hills. It's one of the weird little quirks of California and its bending of water and everything else. It's, there's just no hills there. It's on a kind of a slope. It's on the west side of Western Kern. Back in the 1880s, these five brothers, Jewish brothers, who had come west to for the gold rush, they ended up buying a lot of land. They bought 25,000 acres in Western Kern near Lost Hills, and they were actually trying to build a homeland for persecuted Jews from Russia. It was going to be an Israel before there was an Israel, and they dug all sorts of holes in the ground trying to find water, and there was no groundwater there. So that whole notion of a homeland for Jews in Western Kern, of all places, kind of died a mourning. So that's that land. It's got a very fascinating history. And Lost Hills is a little town that sits there, and it's in the midst of these oil fields that were, they're pumping oil out of the ground, and then these ag fields. And kind of shooting down the middle of the town is the California Aqueduct. As it moves north to south, and the water ends up in Los Angeles. So it's a really an interesting little microcosm of the middle of California. And that there in the town, the official population is around 1,800. The actual population is probably closer to 4,000. It's 98-99%, you know, Latino, you know, migrants who've come from Mexico over the past 20-30 years because the living is cheap and there's farm labor there. And so, you know, when you go around town and you talk to folks, you basically gather, and this is not unusual for the San Joaquin Valley, that 80% of those field workers are here without documents or with documents that are phony, and they're making a life, and the town for many years was kind of neglected by the Resnicks. You know, the Resnicks were in Beverly Hills. Lost Hills was 140 miles up and over the mountain. But a couple things happened in the last 10-15 years that kind of poked at the conscience of Linda and Stuart Resnick. And they decided to start, they almost, you know, adopted their company town. And they've done it in an extraordinary way. It's not just writing millions and millions of dollars of checks and giving it to philanthropic groups there. Linda is writing the checks and then running the programs to reduce obesity, to reduce diabetes. She's built charter schools to improve the education. These charter schools are unlike any charter schools in the middle of California. And she's trying, in a way, to change the bad aspects, or what she feels are the bad aspects of their culture, especially when it comes to food. She's trying to get these the families to stop eating tortillas. And you go into their company restaurant, and they're selling these magnificent meals, wild salmon and everything, for $3, and trying to entice the workers to eat this food. And she even wants to get them, you know, to start drinking this special concoction that she's made that will help change the microbial contents of their guts. And it's made of turmeric and apple cider vinegar and ginger and then some of their mandarin juice. And when you walk into the company restaurant, the TVs are on, but they're not showing soccer games or anything like that. They're filled with these public health announcements telling the workers about, you know, how to get your blood sugar levels to a healthy, you know, point and what not to drink, you know, stay away from this drink and that drink. So there's a real question there about where, you know, philanthropy ends and social engineering mm-hmm. begins.
I thought this was so strange, Mark, to read about this. I mean, telling Mexican farm workers not to eat tortillas but to eat salmon? I mean, what is she doing? What is the reasoning behind this?
Well, the reasoning is the obesity and diabetes rates are astronomical here. And these folks are dying young. Mm-hmm. And so she's come in with her resources and her, you know, true belief, and is trying to get them to change their diet. So, and this is what, you know, you call this piece an investigation. It's really in kind of an exploration of place and people. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, I try to write it with, you know, in scenes and, you know, and capture the richness of this place. But it's really an odd thing as you're walking through this world. You're conflicted, and it's actually a good place as a writer to be, because you're not there on a soapbox. You're not painting things in blacks or whites. This is a story that is full of these wonderful grays, all sorts of shades of gray. And that's what kind of tugs me through this. You know, you go to the wonderful park that they've built. It's this incredible park in the middle of Lost Hills, 5.3 acres. It's got two community centers. It's got a water park. It's got a soccer field with artificial turf and lights, and a track that has this wonderful surface that it's been laid over it, and you're looking at all this, and it's so perfect. It looks like it's been laid out, like it was manufactured somewhere, trucked in and laid out in a day, almost like a movie set. And then if you look at the sign, it says Wonderful Park. And the O in the wonderful is drawn in the shape of a heart, the same heart that stamps the bottle of pomegranate juice. So inside the philanthropy is this branding and the extension of the brand as well. So you could see why I was walking through this and absorbing it in a way that was nuanced, ambivalent, conflicted.
Mm-hmm. How would you say, Mark, overall are the workers treated? You write about a number of workers. Pablo, the oldest of five children, came from Mexico. When he was 18, like so many, he had no papers. He prunes and irrigates the almond and pistachio trees and applies the chemicals that can't be applied by helicopter. He makes $10.50 an hour, and the company provides him with a 401k plan and medical insurance, which, of course, so many contractors living in San Francisco have no 401k or medical insurance. But at the same time, you also interview people who say they cannot drink their tap water. It comes out looking like urine.
Yeah, and I don't think we can blame the Resniks for the tap water, although it is their company town, but that tap water is because the pipes are old and corroded and everything else. You know, again, if you're a farm worker in the San Joaquin Valley, you could do a lot worse than working for the Resniks, a lot worse. And they give out scholarships to the children of their workers. Linda's sending, hundreds of kids off to these universities, and then she's following them up in California with tutoring and things like that, life coaches almost. So so you could do a lot worse, and but it is still brutal work. I mean, there's you know, among the most brutal jobs in America are these farm labor jobs. So, and people, you know, there's a scene there where I'm looking at these workers coming out of their vans, and the 20-year-olds look like 20-year-olds, the 30-year-olds look like 40-year-olds, and the 40-year-olds look like 60-year-olds. It's just the toll, you know, just continues to accumulate. And so, you know, there's a reality here of how this place works, and it's a reality that you know, Donald Trump either doesn't know about or pretends to ignore in this whole discussion of immigration.
Mark Arax wrote a lengthy article about Stuart Resnick and his wife, Linda. You can read it in the February edition of California Sunday Magazine. What was the idea, quickly, Mark, behind the word wonderful?
Well, their operation used to be called Paramount. You know, Paramount's a pretty big word. It's a pretty glorious word. But for Linda, it wasn't enough. So she decided to rebrand the whole thing Wonderful. And she had branded the Mandarins Cuties. And then they got into a dispute with their partners. And the partner took the Cutie brand, and then she ended up, they ended up growing the same Mandarins and now calling them, by virtue of Linda's branding, Halos.
And so, wonderful Halos. They have lemons, they have grapefruits. How can people know if, when they go buy almonds, pistachios, or, you know, other crops, that they're buying them from the Resnicks? Is there any way to know?
Well, the wonderful label. It's all wonderful.
And the wonderful label is on the almonds and the pistachios? I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, there's wonderful pistachios. It's you know, they're get cracking is the you know, the slogan. But yeah, you could their products, the ones that are packaged and sold in the United States, they clearly, you know, claim them. They're not trying to sneak any of that by. And if you watch the Super Bowl, you see their ads, and so it's a remarkable. And, you know, this is a guy who grew up in New Jersey. His father was a bar owner, and he comes west to go to school at UCLA. And by the time he's finished with law school there, he's almost a millionaire already, doing these side businesses. And that's another part of the piece, how he acquired all this, then how he joins up with Linda, it's his second wife, and how they end up taking agriculture to a whole other place. They've wedded the dirt culture of the valley with the kind of hype and marketing culture of L.A., and they've done something that no farmer, and I put quotes around that, has done in California before.
Right, because, as you say, they're mostly liberals. Sometimes they vote for Republicans, but they hang around all of the top names in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And they're connected to the Democratic Party in California. Where do you see this going, Mark? Because we are entering another drought. You've talked to a few people who gave you some insights about what's to come for the Resnicks.
Well, Stuart Resnick's 81 years old. He acknowledges that, in spite of all that pomegranate juice he's drinking, you know, it's going to come to an end sometime. What happens to this company? And he doesn't want to see it, you know, get bought up in some leveraged buyout. But who's going to swallow up this? And so, what happens is he's, you know, he's living in Beverly Hills and doing this up and over the mountain. But at some point, someone even farther away, maybe a hedge fund back in New York, is going to control this, and they're not going to have any connection to the land. And then what happens then is they will strip the water off the land and then sell that water, and it'll go like all water ends up going, to houses and suburbs and commercial strips. And then we'll have another kind of tragedy. You know, to me, and even if you're looking at this from the Bay Area, it's a lot better to have orchards than it is to have a bunch of mini malls and cookie cutter houses here. And ultimately, that water will probably be stripped off the land, sold over the mountain your way, over the mountain, LA's way, and then some of it will be sold to developers here to turn the San Joaquin Valley probably into the San Fernando Valley someday.
Wow. And Mark, we're almost out of time, but have you heard from any politicians or neighboring farmers who are really angry about the fact that the Resniks are stealing so much water?
They're not stealing water. They're taking the water out of the state water bank. They've got out of their water bank, out of the state water project. And then they are manipulating this water, but they've also bought, during the drought, that's the other thing. It wasn't just that pipeline. They bought $200 million worth of water from others. So it's all kind of, you know, above board, questionable, controversial, but above board. And so you don't hear a lot of grumbling from others because they're playing within the wide boundaries of that law.
Mark Arax is an investigative journalist and author. You can read his lengthy exploration of the Resniks, Stuart and Linda Resnick. It offers a rare look into their empire in the February edition of California Sunday Magazine called A Kingdom from Dust. Mark, thanks so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for all the excellent questions. It was fun.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we'll speak with artist Sonara Taylor. When she was six, she first learned that animals are mistreated. When she was 21, she realized the same thing about disabled people. She wants us to think deeply about what divides the human from the animal, the disabled from the non-disabled, and what it might mean to break down those divisions. We'll speak with her tomorrow about her new book, Beasts of Burden. Your Call is produced here at KALW. If you'd like to listen to our podcast, sign up for it. Visit yourcallradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Your Call Radio. Malihe Razazan produced today's show. Josh Wilner is our social media producer. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us. It's Your Call.